Good morning. Meeting of Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance will come to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Junkie?
Here.
Representative Wealthy? Representative Finstad? Representative Doty?
Here.
Representative Faust?
Here.
Representative Hamilton?
Here.
Representative Hansen? Representative Heidgerken? Representative Magnus? Representative Olin?
Here.
Representative Otremba? Representative Peterson? Representative Poppy?
Here.
And Representative Szymanski?
Here.
All right. In your packet, members, you have the meeting minutes from January 23rd, and Representative Szymanski moves approval of those minutes. Any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Those are adopted. Members, today, similar to yesterday, we're going to do a budget overview of this time the Department of Agriculture. You have that here. We're going to get, we will be getting you small three-ring binders for both the Department of Agriculture and the Veterans Affairs budget, so you'll have them with your name on them to mark up as we go to make notes in, and you always get your folder back. So I just want to note that we're working to get that from House Supply and get that set up. Today we'll be going through the ag budget. Commissioner, if you want to come forward while we're talking here. We're pleased to have Commissioner Hugesson join us. He'll be here for about the next half hour, 45 minutes. So if you want to grill him on anything in particular, you know, get it out of your system early because he'll be leaving. So we just want to make that point. But secondly, and I think more importantly, as we look at these budgets, members, if you listen to the, I'm going to say some good things, since this is a nonpartisan committee, good things about our president. If you watched his speech last night, as I'm sure you did, Commissioner, he asked for 35 billion gallons of ethanol over the next 10 years. That's good stuff for us up here in corn and soybean and agriculture country. In Minnesota and the upper Midwest, quite frankly. And this committee's focus, as you know, or if you don't know, will repeat this year, along with the commissioner who is on board and the governor, and hopefully in the Senate, although the Senate, you know, we'll deal with them later. But at least with us, we're going to focus a lot of resources and a lot of time and energy on where this next generation here in the 21st century of biofuels will be coming from. We cannot possibly cover 35 billion gallons with corn ethanol. We absolutely cannot do it. Where's my corn grower friend? Sorry, Ronnie. The lobbyist is back there, but he knows it too. We can't cover that with corn ethanol, so we need to rapidly put forth monies for research and development of that next generation of fuels, whether it's switchgrass, whether it's timber products in northern Minnesota, whether it's corn stalks and other crop wastes, whatever it is, there's a number of things that we can do and we can focus on. And I absolutely believe that the Department of Agriculture and these committees that oversee their activities should be the pivot point for all of that. And we're the ones out there, and we're the ones involved, and I think we're the ones that can lead Minnesota into this next generation. Who was that? The can is over there, Mr. Olin, for our coffee.
What was it? Off before.
Oh, it's back here somewhere. Whose thing went off? Raise your hand. Well, when you guys figure out, one of you owes a buck to the jar over here, all right? And I know they know up there. So anyway, members, as we look at this budget, there's some initiatives in there for doing exactly what I think the president and the governor and certainly us in a leadership role in the legislature are envisioning. But we need to now understand if this is tailored in the right way. We need to put our mark on it and make sure that we're moving forward in a positive way. And you'll see some of that in this budget coming up. So I just want to highlight that, among many other things in here that I think will be an interesting budget by the time we're done. So with that preface, Commissioner, welcome to our committee, and the floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Gene Hugeson. I'm Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Just as a tiny bit of background, and many of you I had a chance to visit with or see and talk to when you were over to the department last week for the tour, but I had, that meeting I had to leave before it was over, too, so I didn't get a chance to visit as much as I'd like to. But my involvement with the House Agriculture Committee goes back actually 20 years, because it was 20 years ago this month that I started my legislative service, and the whole time I was in the legislature, I was on the House Agricultural Committee, and went from there to the Department of Agriculture. So for the last 20 years, I've been involved with this committee in one way or another, and have certainly enjoyed and appreciated that length of camaraderie that certainly has gone on. And while it's true, Mr. Chair, we do work with the Senate, too, it's always better to work with the House.
Thank you for that. That's on the tape, by the way.
Yes. We'll be flipping. And I will pay for that dearly later, I'm sure, especially when it comes to confirmation hearings.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, today what I'm going to do is just do kind of a brief introduction. Obviously, I'd be willing to take some questions. And part of the reason the reason I have to leave early is because of the President's speech last night. It has generated a lot of interest. And no, I didn't get the chance to see it because I was out at Morton to the Corn Growers Convention conference going on out there. They hadn't seen the speech yet as of last night, but I know they were anticipating what was going to be coming out there, and I am sure there's some very happy and smiling faces today, and I echo the comments you mentioned earlier. I will comment maybe a little more on them a little bit later. But when we look at the budget for the Department of Agriculture, certainly it involves a lot of traditional kinds of things that we're involved with, because certainly from the Department of Agriculture standpoint, we've been involved with the production or the involvement with the industry in Minnesota that's involved with producing food and fiber. But obviously in the last 20 years, that's also shifted over to fuel. And so now we've got a new thing that we're involved with, a new mission that we're engaged with. And it's sort of by evolution that the Department of Agriculture has been in sort of the point agency on this whole issue, and likewise the committees in the House and the Senate on this as well. But as you well know, every other committee has gotten very interested in what's going on in the whole area of energy. And so for that reason, agriculture has become front and center on so many of these different kinds of things. Today here, I do have with me Quinn Cheney, who's the policy person that works obviously with the legislature, but then also Stephen Ernst, who is the budget director and the division director of the finance division in the department. And he'll be walking you through the more specific details of the budget for the Department of Agriculture. Like most state agencies, we went through some cuts 4 years ago because of the problems with the deficit that existed in the state. 2 years ago, the budget, the governor did not make any cuts in the Department of Agriculture. We were held harmless, and in fact, a few new things added. That's the same situation this year. There are no cuts to the agricultural budget proposed in the governor's budget, and in fact, we are actually got some increases in some areas other than the renewables. So that's things that we'll touch on as well. But I think part of what the chair has expressed to me is a desire to go through the whole focus of the Department of Agriculture so that people have, the particular new members, have a better grasp of what really goes on in the department, what we're all involved with. And I like to preface that with saying that certainly as it relates to what we're involved with, certainly we're involved with promoting agriculture. That's about half of our job. And those kinds of things are, what can we be doing to help add value to the raw products that we have in Minnesota? Minnesota's blessed with a lot of various commodities, a lot of things that we do here in the various ecoregions of this state that gives us opportunity to grow a lot of different crops, raise a lot of different kinds of livestock, and we do it well. And for that reason, we have a lot of our agricultural people, whether it be in the production end or in the processing and distribution end, are involved with that industry as well. It is a big business in this state, and it's often somewhat frustrating and a bit challenging for us in the ag community to have to remind the rest of the state how important this industry really is to the state's economy overall. But I think certainly the energy issue has helped focus where agriculture comes in on this whole area also. As it relates to the kinds of things that we're involved with the promotion, certainly we work with all the various commodity groups in working with them. We also are doing things in the area of what we can do to help farmers with meet some of the environmental challenges. We work with a lot of other state agencies and local agencies, and of course federal government as well, on various matters. But the kinds of things involving drainage and kinds of things involving best management practices to achieve the goals that certainly we want farmers to achieve, what we can do to help work with the University of Minnesota in bringing some of that research component back to the farmers and meeting the needs that they have there. And I know, Mr. Chair, you've mentioned that you wanted to touch on research down the road, and we're glad to be involved with that certainly as well too. But this is all important part of what we're involved with as it relates to the department. We're also involved with some financial assistance in terms of the Rural Finance Authority, and you'll be seeing and hearing some more on that. There is a proposal in the governor's budget for some bonding authority this year to go into that, and I know the chair has expressed interest in moving forward with that as quickly also, which is something we certainly want to cooperate and work with also, because that is important to our community. We are not in the business of making loans to farmers. We work through banks, and that's I think a good way for us to be doing this in such a way that we don't compete with the local lending institution, but we certainly are doing things to and help them to be able to leverage some of their situation so that it can be of assistance to farmers in various areas in that regard. Also, of course, as it relates to the what we call the regulatory kinds of functions that the Department of Agriculture is involved with, too. We obviously have areas that we are working with in terms of food safety. We do a lot of things as it relates to inspections for the grocery stores, the dairy farms, the dairy processing plants. We are involved with what's called the State Meat Inspection Program, which is relatively new to Minnesota, but has become just a gangbuster in terms of the kinds of things we're looking at. In fact, there's an additional money that's in the governor's recommendation for the new budget that would increase our involvement in that area, because this is something that farmers have been able to use as a means of direct marketing some of their product into the consumers' areas, whether it be to grocery stores, just house to house, or even to restaurants that are going on in there. We are looking at certainly continuing that kind of work, but one of the other areas I would mention, because this is oftentimes something that comes up when we talk about budgets for the department, and that has to do with our fees. We are a largely fee-driven agency. Much of what we do in terms of how we are our function is determined by the fees that are collected for the various services that we offer to the agriculture community. And so invariably, for those of you that are new, you're going to see that the Department of Agriculture comes to the legislature talking about raising fees, because obviously they need to keep pace with what's going on in that whole area. The one thing that we do have two fee increases this time. One of them is for Minnesota Growing, which is actually something that those people came with to us and actually wanted the fee increase. So this is something that we're doing with them. There's some extra general fund dollars that were put into the budget as well for the Minnesota Growing Project. And it's a very successful program in terms of how we can help assist the people that grow products here in Minnesota actually turn around and sell them close to home. And we're finding a lot of people interested in buying Minnesota Grown, and that's increasing among some of our upscale restaurants. Some of the people that are interested in obviously knowing where their food's coming from, they like it fresh. And so whether we're talking food or Christmas trees, the Minnesota Grown program is something that has been very exciting. One of the other fee increase comes in the area of a food handler's license, and what it involves is a voluntary service that the department offers to individuals that are putting in a facility such as, let's say, a deli in a grocery store. They have to meet certain regulatory requirements, and so rather than them put something in and then discover afterwards that it doesn't meet code, what we offer as a service to them is that we will come in and work with them ahead of time with their architect if necessary, but to make sure that what they're putting in place is up to code and will not have any problems as it relates to inspections, and do that ahead of time as opposed to put something in and then have to pay for making changes later. And so that particular service is, while it's voluntary, is a fee-driven service, and so there's a fee charge for that, and that's where the other fee increase comes in as well also. Certainly as it relates to renewable fuels, though, this has been an exciting area for the Department of Agriculture, and many of you have been active and participants in that, too. One of the things, and Chair Junkie touched on this as it relates to what's going on, this has been a very collaborative kind of effort that's gone on in this state. It has not been partisan. For a while, it even started out, there was a bit of rural versus urban. But as the urban folks became aware of the environmental benefits of the renewable fuels, suddenly that coalesced and became an issue of importance for both rural and urban. And so for that reason, Minnesota has been unique, probably among all the states in the nation, in the sense of having that coalition put together. Minnesota Lung Association has been very important to participant in this whole program as well. And so as a result, we have been able to achieve some things that other folks have not, and not surprisingly, many of those are coming to us now and saying, how did you do it? We want to try to replicate it. And that's certainly something that, based on what the President announced last night, I think we're going to be seeing more of that as well. And Chair Junkie, I think you're going to a conference for Ag Committee chairs here very shortly, and my guess is that half of them will come up to you and want to talk about that issue alone.
Well, Commissioner, we are Representative Otremba, the chair of the Policy Committee. Myself and Vickerman will be in Washington Friday, Saturday, Sunday for a National Ag Chairs Summit. Usually that's in a warm spot, members, but like Arizona, I think, is where Greg Davids went last year. But because they're writing the Farm Bill, we're going to be in Washington. We're actually going to meet with staff and members on those committees. And just to touch on what you just said, on Sunday, what we do is we have a session where we share best practices or worst, best and worst bills that we've seen come through for agriculture in our states. The two that I submitted were our E20 bill and our B2 bill. And so we are sharing with the country what we're doing in Minnesota, and they are interested. You are exactly right.
Mr. Chair, members, I have gone to that conference on a number of occasions in the past as part of the Council of State Governments, which is an excellent organization. And so I encourage your involvement with them because it is a nice way of sharing information. I spoke at a regional event this last summer, and renewables likewise was it got more attention than some of the other the room was packed when I was there talking about that issue. So it certainly is something that's a lot of interest. Quinn Cheney is going to be going out to that as well from the department, so we'll have some representation there also. But Mr. Chair, members, I think you're aware from the governor's budget proposal earlier this week that he's proposing a $40 million in addition for renewable fuels. But keep in mind, that's on top of what we already have in place in terms of fulfilling our pledge and our commitment to the existing ethanol plants that are on the program of receiving the producer payment. And while that it was cut back from 20 cents to 13 cents 4 years ago, the state has a provision in place that money will ultimately be paid at the 20 cents level. It will just extend the years out at which that is happening. I think members would be interested to know, and certainly the general public needs to be reminded of it as well, is that while a lot of people think of Minnesota paying heavy subsidies for the ethanol production and why are we doing it at this particular time, we need to remember that and remind folks that actually less than 25% of the ethanol gallons that are produced in Minnesota at this time are receiving any kind of state payment. In other words, there's a number of other ethanol plants that have been built since, or the existing plants that were built at the excuse me, at the 15 million gallon capacity, which evens out the amounts that paid to them, that has they've gone higher than that. So we produce a lot more gallons than what would qualify under that original 20 cents a gallon subsidy. So as we look ahead, though, certainly there's things that need to be done. As the chair mentioned, the department, the governor, is fully aware that we cannot sustain increased ethanol production solely from corn. We've got to be looking beyond that. I do not believe we're on the verge of seeing a shortage of corn in terms of food concerns. We're a ways away from that. But if we're going to increase five times as a nation between now and the next 10 years, something else will have to give. It cannot come just from corn. Members ought to also be aware, if you aren't already, of course, though, is that certainly the wild gyrations in the grain market have caused a lot of concern among other commodities. Livestock producers certainly are feeling the pinch of what's going on in this whole area, and it's certainly affecting them and what's going on there, too. So there is that issue. But I also remind members and the general public, and as part of the message I say, is that we need to remember, too, is that while the higher corn prices are causing some commotion in the whole scheme of things, we need to remember that $100 a barrel oil does that same sort of thing. And as we look at why we're really doing this in the first place, it's to decrease our dependency on foreign oil. And yes, oil prices have dropped. But at the same time, we also know that we can't just start and stop our program based on what oil prices are doing. We've got to be in a position. And I think it was reiterated again in the President's speech last night where he was talking about the doubling the national reserve. But certainly from Governor Pawlenty's perspective, too, it's imperative that we be in a position of not having to depend on the foreign sources of oil that are generally unfriendly to us in the first place.
Excuse me.
Certainly have no problem with gouging us if necessary.
While we're getting you a drink of water, Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good seeing you again, Commissioners. The question I have has to do with ethanol. And we're in the process of looking at putting an ethanol plant up in our district. But I have had a number of livestock and dairy people are very concerned, especially if you buy corn. And they're not seeing a return on their end, and I know that's nothing you can do. But there's an issue that you can probably address for me. I know we're in the town of Freeport. I looked at, usually there's a 40-cent difference between ethanol and unleaded. And all of a sudden it was 35 cents. I noted it at a couple other places, 35 cents. When I stopped and I talked, well, what's the deal? And they were told that the demand for ethanol is so great that a lot of the ethanol is being sent out to California with the MBTs being outlawed, and there's just such a demand that that's what they got to pay, and that's the best they can do. And I know for a fact that there's a lot of people have told me that if it's not 40 cents, they're not going to burn it. And I think we've got a good start in the state of Minnesota, and the state has put the foot forward in helping these ethanol plants getting started. But I most certainly don't want to see us lose that growth that we're having because of profitability. Anything, have you heard anything in regards to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heidegger, certainly that is an issue as it relates to the price spread between E85 and E10. The reality, as you described, is that certainly the demand for ethanol has skyrocketed, and as along with that has gone the price. And what's happened, though, is that we are probably at the plateau now where the amount of ethanol that's being produced is meeting those extra needs, and it was kick-started or jumped up much higher with the East Coast and the West Coast both moving away from MTBE and having to get ethanol, and so that was largely coming from the Midwest in terms of where that ethanol is occurring. However, what there is a bit of a concern on the horizon in the sense that what we're seeing now is not necessarily much increase in use of ethanol at the way things are right now. And yet we also have a number of ethanol plants that are going to be coming online in the next year or two for sure. As a result, we will probably see the supply of ethanol jump up to the point where we will see a decrease in the price of ethanol and thus make it more attractive and perhaps widen that gap out. Now, obviously, it will also depend on what happens to the price of oil. Will the price of oil continue to go down in such a way that causes some other concern there as well, too? The one thing I would mention, and while I don't mean this flip by any means, I'll tell you what's happening some in my area as it relates to some of the livestock farmers. Some of those livestock farmers have invested in ethanol plants, too. Mm-hmm. And what they've done is they've hedged their bet. And, and actually that's what farmers do best, is look at what ways can we use and do to maximize the kinds of things that we're in, and so that isn't all bad advice for some other farmers, livestock producers as well, to think about.
And members, you need a follow up?
Yep,
Representative Heiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only concern is that we are competing in the dairy industry with other states. We've got a lot of things in play that affect them at home here. Is the price of corn higher, that much higher, for our dairy farmers here than, say, for the dairy farmer out in California, with the ethanol plants driving up the cost?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Heidrichen, I would have to double check on that for sure, but my initial reaction based on just some things that I'm hearing on my own is that I would say that we're probably in better shape here than they are in some other places, because certainly that there are some other states that are almost outpacing us in terms of their ethanol production capabilities. We've got some states nearby us that are actually going to end up being corn deficit. They're going to have to import corn in order to keep their ethanol plants and their livestock industry going. Now, we're not at that point. And part of that reason is that Minnesota has had a history of having to send a lot of our grain, and pardon the pun, down the river or over the rail for export to either other states or other countries. What it has done is it's diminished that amount of corn that's available for that role. And, you know, if you haven't already heard, some of the country elevators, obviously some of the shippers, are feeling that situation as well. One thing that it's not really mentioned in the budget proposal as well, but many of you are perhaps aware that the Minnesota Department of Agriculture has had a grain inspection service in the past. We have diminished that, reduced that along the way to the point where we just kept it at Duluth. We just announced at the first of the year now that we're actually going to close that as well, because there's not enough grain being exported that requires inspection anymore for us to keep offering that service. And the renewable fuels is largely responsible for that. Mr. Chair, maybe I'll just quickly finalize my comments and then take any other questions.
But just to follow up, Representative Heidrichen, can you bring up an excellent question on the pricing of ethanol? And I just want to let the committee know that on February 7th, this committee will be reviewing how we price ethanol in this state. We're going to spend an entire meeting, Representative Heidrichen, around the service station people in, American Lung, MDA, anyone who's interested in this, because you're right, it's one of the number one questions I get out there. Everyone thinks if you live in Saudi Arabia, you ought to pay less for your fuel. And we do live in Saudi Arabia for ethanol, so we're going to try and understand how this whole system is put together and why the price differences and other things. So you're thinking on the same track. February 7th, don't miss that meeting if you're interested in ethanol pricing. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, I just kind of wrap up my comments or my part of it so just to say that this is going to be an exciting year, because you look at what we're facing or what's out there as it relates to renewables, it's going to be it's going to be quite a ride. One of the things that I would suggest as we look ahead in terms of crafting legislation for where we're going ahead with renewables, and certainly as we look at cellulosic opportunities out there, which is where we've got to be heading, we need to be careful that we keep our options open, because we don't know yet what technology is actually going to be used or most useful in this down the road. We also, I think, want to make sure that we coordinate what we can with the federal government as it relates to putting together the Farm Bill. But certainly Chair Peterson and Senator Harkin from Iowa, they're going to have a component of that Farm Bill that is going to be something that we will be using or watching very closely. And I think we want to be careful so that what we put together in Minnesota is a means of complementing and helping go beyond perhaps what the federal government is even going to do, but that we do it in such a way that certainly allows us to do some exciting things in the whole area of cellulosic ethanol. Certainly we're going to see some of our existing ethanol plants be in a position to be able to use cellulose, but I also think we're creating or have the opportunity to create some new ethanol plants from cellulosic material in other parts of the state that currently don't have ethanol, and that's exciting when you look at where this is all going. Mr. Chair, I'll quit at this point and take some other questions that you might have.
Thank you. Broadly speaking, I have a couple, and then we'll get to members here. First of all, I agree with you. We have to coordinate with Colin. We have a unique opportunity in the state, as you all know, with Colin Peterson sitting right there to do some things jointly. And when we're out there again this weekend, we will be meeting with his staff that are working on writing that farm bill up directly also. But I think we also have to understand, and here we're going to need flexibility, because while our budgets will be done and signed into law at the end of May, we hope, they're probably looking at September or October or beyond before they get that farm bill put together. So we may have to come back next year and review some of this and make sure that we're in coordination. So I guess I want to caution there and keep that open also. One question I have before you leave. And we haven't gotten to any specifics here yet, but the governor, as we talk about ethanol pricing, and we know that you administer the program right now for service station pump assistance grants, yet I see in the governor's budget, I think that landed over in Commerce for the E85 pump initiative. Is there a reason it's over there? You know, I just truly believe the focus is over here, and obviously I'll talk to the Commerce Committee over here, too, and tell them we're going to see that bill. But why wouldn't the governor and the finance department, since you're already overseeing those programs, have it here in your budget?
Mr. Chair, members, I can ask Steve Ernst when he comes down here as well, but I'm not so sure that wasn't still with the Commerce Department even now. We ended up writing the checks, but there's still kind of an arrangement whereby Commerce works with us, does the initial work with the service stations, because that's their involvement. Minnesota Lung Association gets involved with determining who actually qualifies for this, and then we have written the checks. That may not change as it has been up to this point. I would mention that you know, the governor's got a very aggressive program there of increasing that to 1,800 pumps. I was recently at a meeting in which a California representative was there, and they just announced that they had doubled their pump E85 pumps in California. They went from one to two in the whole state of California.
Very good. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Commissioner Hugesson. Nice to see you again. I've got a couple questions. Just, one is a district-specific question, and the other is about NextGen. So there's a... grants on page 49, grants for the installation of gasification technology. It says, you know, an offset of natural gas usage to power facilities and to the capture of synthetic gases, which can be turned into a variety of bioenergy products. Okay, that's happening at the ethanol plant in Benson. I'm sure you're aware of that. What's not happening is that PCA can't seem to get them their air quality permit. But in a tour I had 2 weeks ago at the University of Minnesota Morris, they have a biogas plan. And they stated, remember that? They stated that they have their air quality permit. I'm just wondering, I just want to get on the record that, you know, I've been in contact with the PCA, you know, 10, 12 days ago. I haven't received really much of an answer. I'm wondering if you could use your status as a commissioner to help Bill Lee out in Benson move ahead. And would he be eligible for a grant, or he's just doing it already?
Mr. Chair, sure. Representative Peterson, two parts there. Certainly, I will look into the PCA thing as it relates to air quality for Benson. And members, do be aware that this has been an issue, but also keep in mind that PCA has been, I don't want to say beat up, but certainly has been held accountable by a lot of people, even within Minnesota, as it relates to what they do and how they permit. So they've had to walk a very careful and fine line as it relates to meeting some of the court decisions that have been made in the past. But I'll check with them to see what might be going on specifically with that, and ask that they get back to you. As it relates to the provision in the governor's budget, we've looked at it this way. Certainly, as we look at cellulosic materials down the road becoming available for actually production into ethanol, we've got to make sure that we start to build a stock of supply of cellulosic material that actually can be used. Why not then, in the meantime, recognizing that we're a few years away from actually having this other thing happen, why don't we start to use and encourage the use of some of the cellulosic product to replace natural gas in existing ethanol plants? Mm-hmm. And so what this money is targeted for here will be putting together a series of grants in such a way that different entities that are currently using something like natural gas can in fact do a conversion over. Now, you know, the program, as I mentioned earlier, is kept somewhat vague at this particular point, because we want to write it in such a way that allows for the to be inclusive of the various technologies that are out there, to be competitive in a sense for those people that might apply for it, and to, you know, I think also to have some kind of a regional balance so that people in different parts of the state can access this for various reasons, so that we can, in effect, grow that cellulosic production industry At the same time, we're also meeting the needs of existing plants. So, you know, there's nothing in the legislation now or to either exclude or include Benson specifically, but that could just depend on how things are put together.
Thank you. If I might have a second follow-up. On page 3 of the handout given, it's just a general overview type question in the that says, NextGen is a multi-agency initiative in which the MDA, ag communities, and ag industries can work together, et cetera, et cetera. So, given that it's a multi-agency initiative, and you're the commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, do you have a sense that this will go smoothly with multi-agency relations? Because it's biomass this and cell ethanol that, and everybody wants a piece of it, and everybody's all fired up about it. Now, are they going to be trying to get a chunk of your $30 million? Or are these agencies going to put up some money to help develop this? Just a general question.
Sir, Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, really, at this particular point, we have excellent working conditions and relations with other agencies. In fact, much of this NextGen proposal was put together collaboratively with the other agencies, particularly Commerce. Mm-hmm. DEED has been involved, PCA to a degree, and as we get down the cellulosic further, DNR. And yeah. And one of the things that has been very gratifying is to first of all notice the interest in those areas. But I can honestly say I don't see any what I would describe as a competitive grab it for us kind of thing. The other thing to remember, of course, is that we all work for the same boss, and the governor's office has taken a very active role in the governor himself in terms of what comes out of all of this, and my guess is that he won't tolerate the kind of thing if in fact you look at one agency trying to, in essence, try to take it all for themselves. So, you know, Department of Ag has sort of been the lead agency in this, but I say right up front, we don't do it alone, and we can't do it alone. Others talk about creating a Department of Energy in which you do that. I discourage that, or would discourage that, simply because then that sort of thing takes it away from Ag. And you don't have that synergy then that exists between the rest of agriculture and what goes on as it relates to renewable fuels. And certainly from the producer standpoint, we've got to be involved and we have to look at both of that. The key to any kind of a successful operation is communication. And I've served in 3 different administrations. I've served with a whole host of numbers of different commissioners. And in fact, I almost sometimes should figure out how many commissioners I've actually worked with totally, and it would be kind of interesting. But I can honestly say there's never been a better working synergy going on than I see right now.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I think we're the only...
Who's next? Representative Hamilton. All right. Try again. Representative
Lager. Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I was on this committee when we went through the series of cuts. And I'm a little bit disappointed that some of these programs that were cut are not reinstated. We can go back, Representative Junkie, you and I went through the battles of Representative Tremba with the cutbacks at the university, with the extension cutbacks. And ag has always been and the university has always been our resource to keep the engine running out in outstate Minnesota. Some of those cuts were made with Representative Tremba. We had a nice meeting this morning on the group that did the presentation, only to find out that their monies, a couple $1 million, were taken away and never given back. And they used to operate on the interest of those monies. But there's all kinds of pockets of money that were out there in ag country that were taken away when we ran out of money. And I think that it's important that we get some of those monies back. The ag budget has been cut drastically since I've been down here. And I think it's only fair that the other departments are all at the table getting their monies back. And I think it's important for all of us to try to get these monies back within the ag sector. And I think this is where it starts right here. And Representative Junkie will follow your charge.
Right. And I know the commissioner's got to leave. Representative Hamilton, do you have a quick comment?
Just
get him out of the room.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, you acknowledged Quinn Cheney. We see her a lot around the Capitol. Could she come up and just briefly explain what her role is with the department? That'd be okay.
Mr. Chair,
Commissioner, we'll maybe let you leave and bring Quinn Cheney up, but just as we leave, Representative Hygerkin, to your comment, you're right. Just to refresh members that weren't here, 4 years ago, agriculture took a 28% hit on their budget when the shortfall in the state was 14%. So it was double what we should have probably received, and we will be reviewing that this year and try and understand where those levels should be and make sure that we're being treated fairly in our area of oversight. So we did hear you. Commissioner, thank you for coming, and I always appreciate that. Again, as we talk about other commissioners, some of the other commissioners we don't see as often in committee. We do see you whenever you're asked, and sometimes when you're not asked to be here, and we appreciate that. So, and we look forward to working with you.
And Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I apologize for having to run on this issue, but it is one that gives Ag some statewide attention. So I do feel it's necessary to do this. But please know that anytime I can come back and either answer specific questions or continue what we're talking about here, be glad to do so. Also, don't hesitate for any of the members to contact myself directly or through Quinn to get the answers for something that you might have. And so look forward to working with you this year. Thank you very much.
Very good. Ms. Cheney, would you come up briefly since you were called? I will. I think she told us the first time. Do a memory test. Does anyone remember where Quinn Cheney went to high school? She was here the first day. Representative Peterson?
I think it was somewhere in Indiana, and aren't you a patriot?
No.
Springfield, Illinois?
Anyone else?
Got it.
Got it.
Okay. Maybe you can help us with that first, now that we asked.
Mr. Chair, I'm Quinn Cheney. I work with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. I am, official title is the Director of Policy Development, which is a big title for legislative liaison. My job is to help develop the department's policy initiatives as well as their budget initiatives to vet them through the agency process and then send them on and liaise with the governor's office as well. And then once we're in session, to respond to your concerns and questions and get you what you need and help move our bills through the process.
So basically, when we have questions for the department, you might be a good place to start, whether you need to see someone in ag marketing and you have specific questions, or in the agronomic services or whatever, you can get us to the right person. You can funnel it. You'll stop into our office, any member that has a question, and try and get it answered.
Yep, absolutely. And really, it might even be better for you to start with me, in part just because I see you guys on a regular basis, so I can follow through with the questions, Mr. Chair. So make sure that everybody gets a response to
you. What was the high school?
Springfield High School in Springfield, Illinois.
Illinois. You were close.
The senator.
Got on the second guess.
Oh.
Senator.
Yes. Anything else for Quinn Cheney? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
I knew we'd get you up here eventually. Next, we have Steve Ernest.
That's right.
Director of Finance. So I'll let you introduce yourself and your official title for the tape, and then you can proceed perhaps to walk us through some of the highlights of the budget.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Steve Ernest. The last name is spelled E-R-N-E-S-T, pronounced like the first name, Ernest. I'm the Financial Management Director at the Department of Agriculture. And I know this looks blinking on and off.
It does blink, but let's use it as best we can. You just have to blink your eyes at the right time, and it looks like it doesn't blink.
I don't have a PowerPoint presentation. I just have a few things I would put up here that might help a little bit. And maybe I should just zoom in.
I think you have a screen in front of you, too, don't you, that's showing the same thing? There you go.
So I'll just give you a sort of big picture view of our sources first, where our money comes from. And I've broken the general fund into two pieces because a large part of it is focused towards the ethanol and alternative new fuels next-gen initiatives. This These pie charts include the governor's budget, so the $40.5 million is with the new money for the Next Gen initiative. So you can see 33% of our budget is general fund for other than value-added alternative fuels, new fuels, and programs. 34% comes from dedicated sources. $35 million of that $53 million is from the agricultural fund. Those are fees paid for generally specific services. They all go into specific accounts for the service, so the money stays with the activity. $7 million from the special revenue fund, which is largely our agency indirects. We have some other things, like if we put on a conference, people pay a little bit for that, and then it comes through that. $5.5 million from the remediation fund. That's the fund that the Pollution Control Agency manages, but we get money from that for cleanup of ag-related sites. We handle those sites. $5.2 million from the Public Facilities Authority. That's water, groundwater pollution control programs that we get money to give grants out. That money initially comes mostly from the federal government. And I think I would just, I just want to kind of point out the highlights of the document in front of you. So I would just jump real quickly to the end of it, just so we can be done with the revenue side. On page 63, there is a summary of all our revenues. So you can see for the 08-09 biennium, we expect to bring in about $6 million to the general fund. These are mostly from food inspection activities. Our food, dairy and food inspection activities generally have a mix of some fees and some general fund, and some of the fees go into the general fund, and then we get the general fund appropriated back to us, and then some of the fees are just dedicated for their specific purpose. $30 million agricultural fund is our biggest pot of money where we collect our fees. There's $12.8 million that comes from the federal government. And if you turn to the next page, it starts a detailed summary of all of those grants that we get from the federal government. There's a description there, and then they're broken down by all the programs we have. Complete breakdown of all the federal money we're anticipating to get for the coming biennium. And another large number on there, the Rural Finance Administration, that would be our loan money. As the commissioner said, we don't directly loan. We loan through the local banks in cooperation with the local banks. So I'll flip back to the front of the document then and push this up to the second graph here. On page 3, the commissioner's transmittal letter shows a more detailed breakdown of our spending, our anticipated spending for this budget, but this pie chart here sort of shows you the dual mission of our agency. We have the protection regulatory side, which is about half of our agency, and then the promotion development side of our budget, which is a lot of the ethanol. That's labeled ethanol. It's ethanol and cellulosic next-gen fuels and other marketing development programs. On page 3, that breaks this down into much more detail. So you can see for the protection, we've got plant protection, dairy and food inspection, lab services, pesticide and fertilizer management. For the admin and grants there, we have the Rural Finance Authority is $7.2 million, $5.5 million grants and assistance that we give out. And $1 million of that comes from the feds for the Farmers Nutrition Program. And then our admin services, $12 million. And you can see again the $40.5 million for the ethanol and next gen. I might just because some of these numbers are confusing, just point out that in the first paragraph there, we say that our whole budget is 7.6% larger than 06-07 spending, the amount of dollars of all funds we actually spent, and 13.1% larger than the forecast base level. Once we took out what was one time, it looks a little bigger. So then if we get into a little more detail on the funds, if you flip to page 7, this is a summary of all our funding, all our budget for our agency. At the top, you'll see our direct appropriations, the ones that appear in the bill. There's a line there that says current appropriation. This is a little bit academic of a number. This is just taking the 07 appropriation and carrying it forward. If you want to know what the base is for the general fund, you would flip to the second page, or page 8, and you'll see a detail of general fund spending, and it's about a third of the way down the page. $75.14 million for the biennium, that would be our base for the general fund. You can see we took out our one-time spending of $2.4 million each year. So that's our base general fund. Below that, you can see a quick listing of all our initiatives for the general fund, starting with invasive species down to the compensation and adjustment. So for the general fund, I believe our increase over the base is about 24%. So there's a lot of different ways you can look at the percents, and if you ever have any questions on that, you can...
And Mr. Ernest, that all your change items then are built into the base, the new base then, or are there one-time items in there too that we're going to subtract in 2 years from now?
There are some changes to these items. Not all the 9 numbers will carry forward, but I'm thinking our plan is, for example, for the next gen to go from $5 million to $9
million. Right.
So overall, I think it's not changing too much in the anticipated 10. I don't remember any of these dropping off completely.
Me?
Oh, we can see those as we go through because they do list the out years on each individual item. So I guess starting then on page 10, this would be our protection division.
And again, just to members, as we get, you know, the February forecast and beyond, we'll be going through all of these department, you know, budgets one by one, meeting by meeting, and you'll become very familiar with the budgets within. We're just looking for a broad overview now on what's going on. This isn't the end of it.
Okay. So on page 10, you see the listing of the separate programs within the Protection Services program. We've got pesticide and fertilizer, plant protection, dairy and food, and laboratory, what you might call our regulatory and protection activities. Page 11 lists for that whole budget area, in the middle of the page, all the initiatives. So those are broken down within each division. Invasive species is in plant protection. The next four are the dairy and food inspection, and so on.
Mr. Ernest, I have a question. As we proceed and we get to more detail on the budget, at least I would believe the committee would be interested. If we look at page 11, expenditures by category, total compensation, other operating expenses, et cetera, other operating expenses is pretty broad. I think we need to get a handle on what those other operating expenses are, and we'd like to see when we get into program by programming a more complete budget put forth by you with some explanations on some of those lines so that we as an oversight committee for finance can actually understand what those, because they're usually a fairly large percent of the category, yet we don't see any detail on that at all. So I would request, you know, we're going to be a ways away from that yet, but that you would start preparing for us some more detail on some of these line items in here.
Sure, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to do that. We have that information in detail in the biennial budget system, and we can run different reports however you want. This is trying to summarize it, so I...
You bet. We appreciate that.
And I just remembered, I wanted to mention one other thing on the summary on page 7, that it shows 408 full-time equivalents for our agency. We have about 420 people. Generally, we have a lot of seasonals in the summer doing, say, gypsy moth work and things like that. About 250 of the 420 are in St. Paul. So we have about 150 or more. It grows in the summer in the majority of the state. The Plant Protection Division I'm sorry, the protection, the pesticide and fertilizer division starts on page 13. You've got an overview there of what this division does. I'll focus mostly on the numbers. On page 15, you'll have the largest percentage of this division's budget comes from the agricultural fund, the pesticide and fertilizer fees, $17.6 million for the biennium, only $4 million for the biennium from the general fund. This division has one initiative on page 16, and this is to eliminate the special aquatic pest control license. We have pesticide applicator licenses already, and this license was added as a special type of license with some kind of difficult hoops that people had to go through for applying pesticides on water, and we have had complaints that we just don't have enough people licensed out there, and we believe that if we get rid of this special type of license and go with our regular pesticide applicator license, which has testing involved, that we can meet the need for to get the people out there to do the kind of applications that need to be done. That, because we had a little higher fee because it was a special license, we'll lose just a small amount of income by eliminating that. Next division is the plant protection division. On page 17, the numbers on page 19, this is a more even split between some license fees that come to this division, $5.4 million, and general fund that comes to this division. We have one initiative here for some invasive species, increase in invasive species control. This initiative is an initiative between two divisions, plant protection and the Ag Resources Management and Development Division, because the Plant Protection Division tries to keep the pests that aren't in the state yet out of the state, and then our Management Division helps manage species, invasive species that are already here. So we have a portion of this initiative in two places. So you see about $350,000 in this division. I just wanted to show that because that's one of our newest pests that we have on the horizon. That's the emerald ash borer. It's caused millions and millions of dollars worth of damage in Detroit, devastated their ash trees. Illinois has just gotten millions of dollars from the feds to try to fight it there, and it's moving this way. And we have a lot of ash trees at stake. The gypsy moth is the big program we've been working on with the invasives recently, especially we did sprayed a lot of acres up on the North Shore this summer.
And Mr. Ernest, just to that point, I think we do want to have an understanding with this committee too, the crossover with DNR and other places that also have forestry divisions and others, and what we're doing that's unique to them or how we're coordinating between agencies as we go on. And when we get into those budgets, we'll talk about that a little bit.
Okay. Next division is the Dairy and Food Inspection Division. On page 21, the numbers you'll see on page 23. This then, as I said, we do collect some fees and send them to the general fund, some fees to dedicated dairy and food inspection accounts. And so you'll see a mix there that's heavier on the general fund. And this is largely because a lot of what this division does is really for the general good of the state, protecting our food supply all the way from the farm to the table. We have recent concerns coming on the horizon with avian influenza and things like that this division deals with. Page 24 has a for information purposes, change item information on the dairy investment tax credit. I'm afraid if you have questions on that, I probably wouldn't be able to answer them, but I would be able to find some information for you if you need. On page 25, we would like to put our field inspection system for dairies and stores and food preparation facilities online. We have a paper system now where the inspectors go out and fill out the inspection forms and bring them back, and then we enter what we have time for in some databases, but we would like to do this online in the field with computers and have much more information readily at hand. This is just better management. It's also to help us if we do have outbreaks of diseases, that then we would be able to, this information would help us to trace them more quickly. An electronic field inspection system is already being put into place just recently in pesticide and fertilizer inspections, and this money would allow us to grow that system, the same system we have, into this, the food and dairy inspection activities. Page 27, the next initiative, emergency planning and response. We have, like I said, avian influenza has been looming on the horizon for us. We really want to be prepared, and what we've been doing is pulling some people away from different activities they've been working with to try to put some basic plans together, how we can get information out to people and coordinate. The Board of Animal Health obviously is working on this a lot, and they're located in our building right next to us. But we're asking for a new position here and some support for that to do a more proactive, coordinated approach for emergencies, whether they be natural or, you know, God forbid, terroristic type activities against our food supply. On page 29, we have a request for premise identification and record keeping. This again is involving the safety of our food supply. This isn't a complete animal identification. This is just a premise identification, so we can know where the facilities are, more or less, to help if we know that a threat is on the horizon, to coordinate, inform and coordinate at a facility level. This doesn't get to the individual animal specific level, which some people are thinking might be a good idea in the future also. On page 30, our last initiative in this area is the retail food handler plan review. We inspect, for example, grocery stores where they prepare food in delis, but we also have a program where they can ask us to come and look at their plans and look at their facilities as they're developing them. They pay a fee for that, and so we can tell them how they can design it so that they will best ensure the safety, the food will be handled properly when it's there and not become contaminated. The lab services division is the next one. That's the building next to the office building and co-located with the Department of Health as we are. We have a multitude of regular tests when the inspectors go out and bring back regular samples, and then they deal with a lot of emergency tests or feared contamination tests. Those are a lot smaller in number, but take a lot more time and effort sometimes to try to identify what a potential contaminant is. Now, in this section, we have a little quirk. We have a request for some new rent money. We did ask for new rent money in our previous budget because we were moving from our old facilities to our new facilities. Unfortunately, because our new lab building was so unique in its design, the Department of Administration didn't have a real good estimate of what it would cost to run that with electricity for all our equipment and everything we do there, making sure the air humidity is right and all that. It's a pressurized building. It's a really high-tech building. We didn't get the best estimate of what our rent would cost, and so they've come back with us with a new estimate, and this request would then allow us to pay what they're going to charge us for rent, which is a lot more than it was originally.
And Mr. Ernst, when we get to that point, I assume you'll bring in a spreadsheet with those costs from the Department of Administration so we can see why the differences and where we were off in our estimation.
Yep. All right. Next, I'll move into the marketing promotion and marketing program. We've got marketing and resources management and development. And for this, page 36 lists overall for these two divisions that make up this program what our initiatives are. And again, there's a portion of the invasive species request here. The Minnesota Grown request, as the commissioner mentioned, is a very popular program. And then our Clean Water Legacy gets another of our continuations, multi-agency efforts. The first division is the marketing division, described there on page 37. I would note that we, in fairly recent years, five years or so, have had international marketing responsibilities, which we didn't previously have. I think it was 5 or 6 years ago, and so we've been doing things like trying to market turkeys and other products in China, and I think there's some exciting new markets there for Minnesota agriculture. On page 39, you'll see the dollar summary for that division, about $4 million from the general fund, $2.5 million in agricultural fund fees. Page 40 has our Minnesota Grown Initiative. There's two aspects of this. We have a little extra general fund to match what we get from private sources, including donations and the licensing. The licensing portion goes into the agricultural fund. We anticipate that would be $12,000 the first year in new revenues and $13,000 after that. That would be increasing the labeling fee from $5 to $20. And as the commissioner said, that was supported by the groups that pay the fee because they see the payoffs in marketing their products. Second division under marketing and promotion is the Ag Resources Management and Development Division. Description of that division starting on page 41 with the numbers on page 43. This division is the division that kind of oversees the Best Management Practices Loan Program to help management activities so that they'll protect groundwater. You can see their budget is mostly general fund there, $8.3 million. And they have a little, they have some federal money, $1 million in federal dollars. Page 44 shows the Clean Water Legacy Initiative. We have more money here for the Ag PMP loan program. Some more research. This is a continuation of money we got in the last couple of years. The next program is the Value-Added Agricultural Products Program. We call it that. It's right now it's mainly just ethanol, and now we're building cellulosic, but we have chapters that we have a chapter in statute that allows us to broaden this as we have more money available. Or we've been focusing on ethanol and excuse me, the next generation of ethanol. You can see on the numbers page there, the base level for ethanol funding is $15.26 million for our traditional program. And then the governor's initiative on the cellulosic. I don't know why I keep looking over my shoulder. But I just want to give you a brief overview of how our existing program is working. We have this existing level in our base of $15.2 million for the existing producer payment program, and you can see the darker portions of those bars are the regular producer payments. We've been paying those at 13 cents as our budgets were tight per gallon, but we have calculated all the deficiencies, and so we will be making those up over the next few years. So this chart shows that we will pay off all our deficiency payments. The regular program ends in 2010, as you can see there with the last green portion, and then we'll pay off the deficiencies over the next two and a little bit years to finish out that first round.
Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ernest, would you get us a copy of that slide,
yep,
too, before we can sort
of... Thank you.
And members, this will be a big discussion, obviously, and has been for the last number of years. Remember when Representative Heigerken mentioned a few years ago we reduced those payments, and this chart tries to explain how we lengthen it, but then the important line there is the bottom line, where you see $14 million, if you blink at the right time. That's the first year that we could actually capture that entire amount for other things rather than send it back to the general fund, which is very important to this committee, too. So we're going to track this very closely and make sure we understand how we can best utilize some of these resources. But we'll spend some time on this. Mr. Ernest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Our change item, you'll see on page 49 then, for the Next Gen Bioengineering, Bioenergy Initiative, and as I mentioned, it goes up to $9 million in 2010.
Members, this is what we alluded to earlier. When you read this page in full, we've actually, the governor's requested $90 million over 10 years for development of alternative and renewable fuels other than grain ethanol from corn. So we're going to spend a lot of time on this, too, and understand the language in particular that we need to put in with this and understand if the money is enough, not enough, or where we should be on that. But this is going to be a big deal for this committee, too, Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that light, as we move forward with an energy plan, are we going to move forward with one bill on this, or are we going to be the Energy Committee have a bill, Commerce Department have a bill, how are Ag Department have a bill? How are we going to do this?
Representative Magnus, that's a good question, and one that certainly myself and hopefully you all will help us figure out. It's that struggle between departments that we were talking about earlier. Again, I think it's probably going to realistically be multiple pieces and multiple bills. For example, we talked about the other day Representative Welty and Poppy hopefully will carry a bill over to, they're on the Higher Ed Committee, where we write the Ag Special for the University of Minnesota describing what we need for research and other dollars. That won't be in our committee bill, but Representative Rukavina hopefully will include that as we recommend. Now, it's my intent as chair, and I think members here would concur, that if Representative Peterson's bill and others, many others, signed on to that bill that I think most of us support on the renewable energy standard, comes out of Representative Hilty's committee probably initially, we want to see it. We want it here. We want to put our eyes on it. Don't worry, Representative Peterson. We want to make sure that that some of these things are in coordination, you know, that we're not, you know, passing each other in the night and never nary the two shall meet, because I think we do need to coordinate. And I actually think this is probably a committee, as the commissioner talked about earlier, I don't know if you were here then or not, but he did mention that you know, as much as we'd like everything to be in agriculture, we probably can't handle everything and shouldn't. But he suggested that he's a very active role in the coordination of all of this stuff over the multi-departments where it's at. And I think this committee should also, because we're almost exclusively rural Minnesota eyes here, I think we should take a very active role in seeing almost all those bills that come out, or the ones in particular that have interest for renewable energy and those types of things, so that we at least see them, we're familiar with them, and we can make suggestions or changes as need be on those bills. So that's what I see happening this year. And we'll be busy as these bills move out of committee. And I want you guys, gals and guys, to let me and Kate and others know, too. If there's some bills moving or you see them in other committees or hearing about them, let us know if you'd like to see them, and we'll certainly try to get them in here and take a look at them. Representative Peterson, did you have a comment to that? I wouldn't think you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think there's a lot of people are fired up about renewable energy and make general statements about being for it. My bill, Senate House Bill 4, has nothing to do with fuel. It's electricity. And I hope that we have enough informed people to know that's separate.
And Representative Peterson has nothing to do with fuel yet.
We could talk after committee.
And in fact, I'm not being flippant, but members, there are some... actually, when the governor talked about the 25 and 25, that's a national movement. You can get a 25 and 25 pin. When you go to NCSL or CSG or some of these other national meetings, you'll see a booth set up with the 25 by 25 folks from around the country pushing this initiative. And what 25 and 25 is actually 25% of energy, all energy resources, liquid fuels, electricity, anything that produces a BTU of energy is included in that to be a 25% economy by the year 2025. And I understand you're just focused on electricity, but I think, at least from our aspect of this committee, that we're much more focused on an overall renewable standard for all energy use in this state, and I think we can make that. And so I think we will have some discussions on that and understand how it fits in or doesn't fit into your bill. And certainly if we need to do something beyond that, we have the tools here with the $90 million program that's been put forth to us here. If we move ahead with that, I think we're going to have a way to address some of those things. But there are, I understand there's two separate issues, and I think it's up to us to decide how we move forward, particularly in fuels, which are huge to us. Okay, Mr. Ernst, you have about 10 minutes. I don't see Mr. Martin here. He was on our list, so I assume you're it?
I believe so.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, you did remind me that there was a question about the E85 grants. We had a one-time appropriation to us in fiscal year 2006 for $500,000 to give E85 pump installation grants for new installations. We gave out all that money, about 54 grants, I believe. So our cap was $15,000 per, it averaged about $10,000 per, less than $10,000. Our involvement with the Department of Commerce with that is basically they told us how to do it, kind of. I mean, they had been doing this for a long time, or for some time, I don't know how long. And we met with them when we got the money, and we wanted to make sure we coordinated policies, because they still have been doing it, as the commissioner said also. They've gotten some private money, I believe it was from the Ford Foundation. And so I think, you know, either agency could do it. They'll probably continue seeking some of those private funds for similar installation grants. But in this budget, the new state money was put with them also, and I don't know that that's a huge distinction, but we have been working with them. All right, then, to finish up, the last program is the Administration of Financial Assistance Program. The activities you'll see listed on page 51 are grants and assistance, rural financing, and administrative services. Rural financing is basically the RFA, the Rural Finance Association, and administration, I believe. But we do have a little federal grant money that isn't directly under the board, so it's not all the Rural Financing Board. It's a little broader than that. Grants and assistance starts on page 53. In the little box there, you see listed what our biggest grants are. We have about $1 million a year for dairy development. About $750,000 of that goes out directly for the teams, dairy development teams. Our farmers market nutrition program is our other big one there, and we get about $1 million from the feds for that also, to get the checks out for people to help buy Minnesota grown products in the markets, people who are in nutritional need of nutritional assistance, I guess is how they phrase it. Page 56 starts the rural financing. These are our loan programs, again, not directly, but working with the local banks, as the commissioner said.
And members, just a point to be made. We've handed in a bill I have already to I'd like to try and move some money this year early if we can. I don't know if it's possible. They're out of money right now.
Mm-hmm.
You go up to the website and it says program's been discontinued because they have $0. Because of the increase, higher interest rates that we're seeing and other things, the program became a little more popular than I think what you and your colleagues over there had calculated, unfortunately. So our bankers have been calling, at least me, and I suspect some of you, saying we can't access beginning farmer loans or digester loans or anything else. It's just not there. So we hope to do that. We're also going to look at members as a heads up. I think we may look at, is there some categories we should add here, particularly with renewable energy. We have the digesters, but there's a lot of other small energy projects waiting out there in our communities and on our farms that people would like to get going on, and I think adding a renewable energy line to this and working with RFA, they do a good job in administering and working with our banks, and perhaps we can get some resources to some energy development through this group also.
Mm-hmm.
So just a heads up on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I misspoke. RFA stands for Rural Finance Authority. And that's they have a board, and that's a smart group of people that helps us out with that. So I think there are some good things we can do there. And then finally, administrative services would be the commissioner's office, human resources, finance and budget, those kind of things. The numbers you'll see on page 61, there's some general fund there and some special revenue. The special revenue is basically the agency indirects that we collect on the non-general funds. The general fund pays its share of the overhead itself, and then the other ones we collect from the ag fund and the federal funds and all those and funnel it through the special revenue fund to support all the agency-wide things that need to be done. And on page 62, you'll see our agency-wide initiative for compensation adjustment. This is the governor's recommended 2% salary allowance for compensation increases. As you know, the cost of health care and things are rising for everyone, so that is what that's there for. I already spoke about the revenues, so I think I've walked you through the whole document. I'd be glad to answer any questions or go back to anything.
Anyone have any questions at this point? Otherwise, members, Representative Otremba.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know that Representative Meggs asked for one of the charts, but I would like all the three of the charts. Thank you.
If you could provide that to the committee, we'll get them in your folders for next week. Members, again, this is an overview of the budget. We'll be going more detailed into it, but certainly, take the opportunity here or online at the finance department. You can find this on your computer also to read through some of this. And just a reminder, this is the governor's budget request. And certainly we're going to do all we can to work with the commissioner and the department and the governor to fund a lot of what they have requested. However, they request, we're the ones that appropriate the money. And so as a legislative body, that's our duty. And certainly that means that we have great input on these budgets. And certainly if there's things that you think we should be addressing that aren't in here, or we should maybe be looking at more resources than what's in here or less, we want to hear all those ideas. When this comes out of here, it will be our budget request and appropriation for the House Ag Finance Committee. And it won't look exactly the same. It'll look pretty similar, but we'll probably have some of our own ideas, and I think we should. So with that in mind, absolutely start thinking about that, talking with myself or Kate, the CA here, and others on where you think we should be going, because we'll start working on this probably next week. We're going to be research-oriented. We're going to have a couple days of testimony from the U of M, MDA, AURI, privates and others on research needs in the state. Again, in preparation, everything we're doing, hopefully you'll see a connection eventually, but in preparation for that $9 million a year that the governor is putting forth, how do we direct that? Or in preparation for writing the ag special, I think we need some background and information, so we're going to focus on that. The week after, Tuesday the 6th, is Dairy Day. And we'll have a room full of dairy people testifying and getting you updated on the dairy industry in the state. And we will hear the dairy investment tax credit bill that day, although we probably won't pass it out because I think we need a broader discussion on whether we bring other animal agriculture groups into it or not. You saw the request in here, so certainly that will be moved, but probably not that day, but we will hear it. And then the next day, of course, will be the ethanol pricing discussion, which again I hope leads to a discussion on the governor's overall initiative for the 1,800 or 1,500 or whatever it is pumps, and hopefully get us thinking, is that the best way to utilize $12 million or is there other ideas we may have after hearing those discussions? So hopefully we're setting a base for a lot of discussion in the future. So any other business anyone has for the committee? Thank you for your attendance. Meeting is adjourned.